This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're talking with Florida Southwestern State College journalism professor Ron Feimster in advance of his upcoming lecture called President Trump's Twitter Feed, The Rhetoric of Authoritarian Propaganda. Feimster argues that the president uses an anti-factual communication model common to authoritarian leaders on both the left and right extremes of the political spectrum, with a goal of discrediting his press critics and communicating with his supporters directly on an emotional level. But first, retired engineer Cesar Frustaci was just 8 years old when his family was forced out of their home in Budapest, Hungary, and forced into an extremely crowded so-called Yellow Star house because his mother was Jewish. Shortly after that happened, Frustaci's mom sent him out to live on the streets because he had been baptized as a Catholic, which meant he didn't have to live in the house with her and the rest of the Jews. As the war progressed, Frustaci lost track of his mother and his father, who was living in Naples, Italy at the time. And on today's show, we're going to hear his story of what happened next and the hardships he and countless others faced during that war and the atrocities that were occurring all around them. Mr. Frustaci will be the guest speaker at the Catholic-Jewish Dialogue of Collier County's 80th Annual Kristallnacht Commemoration event this Sunday in Naples. But he joins us now in studio. Cesar Frustaci, welcome to Gulf Coast Live, and thanks for coming in to share your story with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. You can do so by calling the number 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So at the very beginning, let's start all the way back. You were born in Naples, Italy, right?
Correct.
And your dad was an Italian Catholic, but your mom was a Hungarian Jew. So how did you wind up in Hungary with just your mom?
Well, in the 1930s, they were living two major criminals in Europe. One was Adolf Hitler, and the other was Benito Mussolini. And Mussolini, in 1938, created a new law that all foreign Jews had to leave the country. So therefore, my mother was forced to break up my family and leave and go back to her native country and native city, which was Budapest. But she couldn't leave a 2 years old child with my father because he was every day in a different theater. He was a composer and director of orchestra, and therefore he was moving from one place to the other. So he couldn't leave the child with the father, and she took me with her to Hungary.
So your mom was a dancer, and that ends up being a pretty important factor to her later when she faced some serious hardships. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, what happened is that when we went to Hungary in 1938, all the opera house and the theaters and the newspapers, Jews was fired. Jews couldn't occupy any place. Therefore, my mother couldn't go back to the opera house. And therefore, she was doing all kind of job in order to feed us with a little bit of food. So that was the situation. And soon she had to start wearing the yellow star. And therefore, because at that period, it's very important to know that the Hungarian ID was a photo ID in the following way. On the top was the last name, then the first name, then the address, and then the religion. So if somebody was a Roman Catholic, it was Catholic, Christian. And if it was Jew, it was Jew. So in the roadblocks, they have always verified the ID. And they found that somebody was a Jew and not wearing the yellow star. He was or she was shot on the spot.
Really?
Immediately. And left there for several days. And there was with a choke, it was written, "Here lies that stinky, dirty Jew who did not wear his mandatory yellow star."
You saw this when you were a child?
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't read it because at that time I couldn't read. But I have seen for left bodies on the streets several days as a lesson for those Jews who were not wearing that yellow star.
But you were, when you were born, you were baptized a Catholic.
Yeah,
correct?
Well,
so you didn't have to wear the star, but your mom did.
No, what happened is that when I was born, I was a sick baby, and my aunt was asked to run immediately to the parish, bring a priest to baptize me. And this is why I have had immediately my baptism certificate. Now, what happened is that when we were ousted in Budapest, I mean, we were ousted from our apartment. And
so your family, you're living in your apartment in Budapest, and you were taken out of that and forced to live in what's called a yellow star house?
Exactly, a ghetto house, you know. And then what happened is that in that ghetto house, my mother knew very well already that all Jewish children and gypsies were taken to the Danube River and thrown into the water to drown. Those who could swim was using and moving targets for rifle shooting. So she knew what is the situation for the Jewish children in the yellow house. And she didn't want me to be there. She took the extreme sacrifice that before curfew, she took me down on the street and she asked me, "Now listen to me and listen very carefully." And then in Italian, she asked me, "Capisci?" And you know, and I said, "Yeah, well, first, you are not Jew, but you are Catholic. Second, you are not Hungarian, but you are Italian. Now, here are your birth certificate, put in one pocket. Here is your baptism certificate, put it in the other pocket. And now listen to me very carefully. You never, ever come back here. You understand me? Never, ever come back to this building. And now lower your head." And she put her little hands on my head, I still remember, and she blessed me, and she said, "Now, turn around and go and find yourself a place to sleep, find yourself something to eat. Now go." And she turned around and re-entered in the ghetto house. At that point, I really didn't know what to do with myself.
Well, how old were you?
At that time, it was 7 years old.
So a first grader?
Yeah.
What we would see as a first grader?
It was my first thinking was I sat down on the sideway and I was thinking what to do. And then I remembered that as children, we around the opera house, we were playing hide and seek, and I always was hiding behind the big statue. And I remembered that, and then I went immediately there, and I went behind the statue. But it was March. It was very cold. I was freezing there. I couldn't sit down because my white legs would show outside and people would see me. So I was there for a couple of nights, and then I started thinking what the hell to do with myself. And then I remembered a very important thing, a key. When I was 5 or 6 years old in our old apartment, my mother was cooking and heating in the wintertime with firewood. So when I was playing, he was saying, "Caesar, go down to the cellar and bring out the firewood." And that was my chore, my activity. And I had to go back to the apartment, pick up the padlock key of our cellar, go down, pick up everything and go close again the padlock and go up in the apartment. When I did this two or three times, I was upset of doing these all these trips.
So you just left the key there?
And I left the key in the downstairs near the I was hiding it, and left the key downstairs near the cellar. And that is what came to my mind when I was behind the statue, because we had to deliver the apartment key, because the apartment was immediately looted. But everybody forget about the key of the bed, and that is what came to my mind.
So did you go back to the apartment house and was
exactly,
the key there?
Exactly, very slowly, and I hidden, and I was hiding in the cellar for 3 months. And that this is, was my issue. At that time, I had three problems to solve. Problem number one, lodging. Problem number two, eating. And number three, hygiene, bathroom, and so on. So I had to solve all these problems. Number one was solved because I have remembered of the key of the cellar. And I was hiding there. Number two was in the morning, I got up very early and went to the nearby tennis court and collecting tennis balls. At the end of their game, the players gave me a small tip. And that small tip served me to go to the grocery and buy something to eat. And I solved problem number two, eating. Number three, hygiene, was that I went to the management of the tennis court and I asked them, may I clean the bathroom and may I clean the showers? And I said, where the hell you want to do that? But anyway, go and do it and remember, we are not paying you. So while I was cleaning the bathroom, I made my shower and cleaned the bathroom. And that was it. I took care of all three problems that I had.
And you're 7 or 8 years old, and it sounds like you really like went after things very logically and kind of in survivor mode. Did you have time to have a whole lot of feelings at that point? Did you feel?
No, I was very busy.
You're too busy surviving.
Yeah, I was very busy because, for instance, that the players were generally employees. At 9 o'clock, they finished playing. I had to go back and hide in the cellar. And after a while, I was upset of this. And I knew that there is a beautiful island in the middle of the Danube River in Budapest called Margaret Island, and that was full of tennis courts and swimming pools, a couple of hotels. And there just the tourists were playing. So and they were all day playing. So one day I decided to go there. And I was walking on the bridge, Margaret Bridge, from past to the island. And what happened is that there was marching in front of me a group of people escorted by armed guards and dogs, you know. And all of a sudden it was about, I don't know, about 30, 40 feet from me that I saw them from the back. But I heard that one of the guard was saying, what are you doing, your dirty, dirty, stinky Jewish whore? What are you doing? And then he took something from her arms, went to the rail of the Danube, the bridge, and threw it into the Danube. This woman was completely crazy, was shouting and getting out of the march and running towards the rail, and this guy just took her his pistol gun and killed her, grabbed her two legs and threw her into the Danube because she was carrying her little child in her left arm and covering the yellow star, and what she was not supposed to do that. What happened is...
So you saw this on the bridge as you were on your way trying to find someplace better to scrape by.
And what happened is that this shows that in Hungary in 1944, there was no persecution killing Jews and Gypsies. That was absolutely legal, and everybody could do that. The other pedestrians on the bridge, they just turned around and pretended not to have seen anything. And I did the same thing because I was looking what they were doing, the other pedestrian. But I still today remember this episode, and that is a terrible thing.
Sounds like you remember the silence of the people walking by as well.
Of course. Nobody would say anything. The group would just continue marching, and that was it.
So my producer writes that you worked as a collector of bomb debris at some point.
Yeah.
Well, when did that happen? Did you make it to the island and then after? In 1944,
the United States Army Air Force was bombing the German German places, and very frequently they were coming to Budapest and bombing, and we were hiding into cellars, and I was going generally in the cellar of the underground, and when the siren was blowing, and meaning that the air force was coming. Yeah, finished bombing the city. I got out and ran to the bombed houses, and in the bombed houses, I collected things that were important, such as shoes, such as things that were important for me, and because that one I could trade the shoes with others and therefore have either money or food or something to take care of myself.
Well, it was currency, really, at that point. So your father hatched a plan to smuggle you and your mom back to Italy, but it ended up going wrong. What happened then?
Well, that was, I know what you mean. That was a time that we were contacted. I don't remember now, because I was out. My mother did not let me stay in that house. I was by myself. And I remember that one day when I went near the house and told somebody, send down my mother because I want to talk to her. That was the beginning of July, 1944. And my mother said, there is a person, Mark Getty or something, I don't remember anymore, from the Italian embassy who came and will come and take you and me back to Italy, smuggle us back to Italy.
Can you remember how you felt when that...
Well, it was sad, but what happened is that at the appointment time, they were there, this man and the woman. And the man said, now we take only Caesar. You, ma'am, go back to the ghetto building. And the woman took me about 25, 30 miles north to Budapest to a detention camp and not to my father. So what happened is that she downloaded me into this detention camp. And there is where I was until the liberation, which was in January 1945.
What was life like there? Was it better than scraping by on your own?
Oh, it was much better. It was much better because it was a former orphanage. And in the orphanage was managed by Jesuit priest. and they were extremely good to us. I remember that when I arrived in July, I was a few days later, I was 8 years old, because of the 11th of July, I was 18 years old. What happened is that this camp had gardens and had fruit trees, apple,
orchards.
Pear orchards. And my job was to climbing on top of the tree and harvest the apples and bring it down. And children was putting, small 4 or 5 years old children, putting into boxes, and the militia came and took it away. Now what happened that in top of the tree I could eat whatever I wanted. And when I came down, I brought apples in my pockets and so on to give it to the children. And what do you think the priest did? Turned around, pretending not seen. So that was a very good thing until October, November. But in October and November, there was no fruit anymore.
Yeah, you were eating good until the end of season.
Yeah, exactly. And what happened then? And the Russians were approaching, so the gun fight and we heard, you know, so the priest took us down into the big cellars, you know, and there we were, and each morning when we woke up, there were 3, 4, 5 children dead, starved dead, because there was nothing to eat. Even I remember 2 priests were dead, because they gave that little food that they had to the children. And then I was very fortunate again, because we were going out drinking. There was no water, so we collected the snow and eating snow. But that brought diarrhea, so we couldn't eat the snow. So I remember I had a small flowering can, and I was flowering the flowers in the summertime, and that was with me. So I remembered that there was a small river not far from the camp. So I got out, and I walked to this river to bring some water. And what happened that I was passing by green bushes with red berries on it. And I was so hungry that I started eating one of those berries. Oh, boy, it was so sour and bitter. Ah, it was very... But when you are hungry and you cannot eat anything and there is not even expectation that you will eat something, so I started eating by the handful. How lucky was I? Because I only learned many, many years later in high school that I was eating rose berries and full of vitamin C. And that saved me from having my teeth fallen off for scurvy like all the other children.
Oh.
And it's a coincidence or a miracle.
Yeah.
And I had that one. So that answers to your question.
If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Cesar Frustaci, who will be the guest speaker at the Catholic-Jewish Dialogue of Collier County's 80th Annual Kristallnacht Commemoration Event this Sunday, November 4th. That's at the Temple Shalom on Pine Ridge in Naples. Mr. Frustaci was a young boy in the late 1930s and 1940s and saw the horrors of the Holocaust firsthand after being separated from his parents in Hungary. If you'd like to ask him a question or make a comment, please give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So eventually then, the camp was liberated, the orphanage
yes.
that you were in. What happened that day?
Well, the camp was liberated by the Russian army, and they escorted us. They gave us food, and they escorted us to the International Red Cross mm-hmm. that was acting in Budapest at that time. And Budapest, 18,000 houses, buildings, were at ground zero. So this International Red Cross set up tents in a park similar to the Central Park of New York. And that is where we were sleeping.
During this time period, were you thinking or feeling hopeful that you might find your mother again?
Well, no, because I know that my mother was in Germany, in the German concentration camps.
You had been told that she was taken.
Oh, yeah, there. Of course. And she was dying. She dead. This is what the said by the Red Cross, because they knew that everybody who is in the German concentration camps, sooner or later, they are murdered.
So it was at this point that the Red Cross said that.
At this point, they said that I was an orphan because my mother was dead in Germany. Until the Hungarian government realized that they are in a very big trouble, because the Hungarian men are all at the Russian front, or the Russian prisoners, or dead. And there is nobody cultivating the land. So they gave order to the Red Cross to send the children to the rural families to help them, because otherwise in 6 months this country will die.
They'll starve.
They will nothing. And therefore, they sent me about 250, 300 miles from Budapest in a very small town. No, it was a village, not even town.
And they changed your name?
Yeah, they couldn't pronounce it. At that time, I used my Italian pronunciation, Cesare, and they couldn't pronounce Cesare Frustaci. So this family adopted me, and they gave me a Hungarian name. And my last name became Babai, and the first name Géza. So I was at that time Babai Géza. And then what happened, that by miracle my mother survived the concentration camp near Berlin and walked back to Budapest to look for me.
So you were told that your mom had died, and as it turns out, she did not. And she survived the concentration and physically walked back to Budapest.
Exactly. And in Budapest, she was looking for me, and then she learned that the Red Cross was, so she went to the Red Cross. At the Red Cross, she started asking, where is my son? And they said, we have sent all the children to the rural families. And she started, when she was excited, she started raising her voice and said, Madam, quiet. Here we are in wartime. We have no paper. We have no pencils. We have no pens. In other words, we do not have records. We don't have the vaguest idea where is your son. Goodbye. And then my mother had to come away and went back to our old apartment, which was completely destroyed. And what she had found there, nothing of the piano, pictures, and everything is gone. But one thing that she was looking for was a picture of mine. I was in the this is a very long story.
Is this the picture that's on your book?
Pardon me?
Is this the picture that's on the front of the book that you wrote?
Yes.
That picture?
Yeah.
So she did she start showing that around? And
not this picture. It's older, because this is the 2 years picture.
Oh, okay, when you were older, that makes sense.
But what happened is that with that picture, he started walking around Hungary from one village to the other. At first, she went to the priest, because the priest knew everything, where are the people around. And the second, the teachers. And she was showing this from one place to the other. Did you see this child? Did you see? No, no.
So she finally found you.
183 days later. So she found me in 183 villages. So
that's a lot more than 183 days, though.
It was a year and a half.
So she searched for a year and a half, finally found you. You had no idea she was looking for you.
No.
Did somebody say, your mother's here, or did you see her?
No. What happened is that the teacher at that time said, no, I don't know this child. but let me show this picture to the children. And the young girl came back. I know him, I know him, I know him. He's Geza, my brother. And my mother said, who? It's Geza, my brother. And she said, but if this your brother and his name is Geza, it's not my child. So the girl said, yes, it's true. And she walked away. And another miracle in my life, 2-3 minutes later, he turned around and came back and said, madam, we actually, he's not my real brother. We adopted him. And he is not really, his name was not Geza. My father gave the name Geza. I don't even remember his name. So he said, what's your name? Anna. Anna, take me to your brother, Geza. And then they went to the house. I wasn't there because what my job was at that time, to handle the pigs. And with the pigs, I was at the marsh, you know. And all of a sudden, somebody came, a young boy. Geza, 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 Geza. And I said, what the hell is happening?
What's going on?
But, because I was so upset because I was training the dog to run after the pigs. And he just was eating my lunch and didn't go anywhere. And the bottom line was that, Geza, 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 your mother wants you. I said, no, my mother doesn't want me because she knows that I leave at 7 a.m. sunrise and I go back at summer sunset. So she, not that mother, the other mother. I said, what other mother? I'm a mother. No, there is a woman there who says that she is your mother. So I walked back and sure
did
enough.
You walk by, back slowly or quickly? Yeah, did you have hope?
No, because they told me that my mother was dead. But I didn't know, let's go. You know, I know at that time that this was a big world. Everything can happen. So I walked back and sure enough, my mother was sitting there on the bench. And that's it.
Did you recognize her immediately?
Oh, sure. And she recognized me, too. Although at that time I was already very, you know, I was spitting on the floor. I was drying my nose in my arms and my hand. And she said, oh, my God, if the maestro would see you, what did we think? How did you grow up?
So, that would be your father.
Yeah.
Did you ever see your father?
Oh, yes.
So you and your mom then reunited, and then did you just get to stay?
Then the communist period came, and all those who were before Nazis now became communist. And the Iron Curtain went up, and I couldn't leave the country anymore. So I went to school, and you know, and I went through a lots of trouble because after the baccalaureate, you know, I was 18, I made an application to the foreign ministry with my Italian passport for an exit visa. And they started a terrible period for me because they have said, listen, you are not going anywhere. You stay here because we have the best universities in the world. If you want to go to school, you can continue your studies in the Hungarian. And remind, I tell you something. And that was during my interrogation. You were taught and became a junior engineer now at the expenses of the Hungarian people.
So what then you owe them something.
What do you want to do now? You, instead of paying them back with your work, you want to go to a capitalistic country that is Italy, that are our enemies, and you want to work against us. But there's treason.
Yeah.
And you know what happens with treason. They are going to jail.
So,
and they tortured me, and they by any ways they wanted me to get the Hungarian citizenship, and I refused it. This is how a series of issues happened, you know, and it's extremely long to explain this.
So the conversation that you're going to have this coming week on the anniversary of the Kristallnacht, are you going to be talking about your life experiences, or are you going to be talking about the broader theme of what you've seen throughout history and its impacts today?
Well, whatever I have to meet the organizer, because I generally I speak without reading and addressed the speech addressed to the audience. Mm-hmm. So depending on the audience, the way that I am speak and the time that I have available.
Well, I could just talk to you forever about your life story.
Well, there are my life stories. The summary can take 30, 40 minutes, and that's just the summary, not the details.
Oh, we only got to 18 here, and it's been 40 minutes.
Yeah. And what happened is that I was once interviewed 4.5 hours.
I can see that.
You know, so it's that is the way. And I had the last 14 years, because it's a common characteristics of the survivors that they were not speaking, never, ever. And my mother never told me anything. I just learned about my mother from official reports, you know, but she never told me anything. And I never said anything to anybody for 60 years until 2004. And in 2004, I read an article that there is an archbishop in England who gave orders to all parishes not to talk about the Holocaust, but that never existed. It's a denier, and never existed, and just an invention of the Jews and the Americans. And if somebody is asking you to talk about the Holocaust, say that it's never existed. Now, at that time, there was a Polish Pope, and the Polish Pope addressed this guy and said, wait a minute, I was a teenager in Poland. I have seen what was going on. You cannot tell this. You cannot deny the existence of the Holocaust. And if you insist, I take actions. And this guy insisted, and the Pope dismissed him from the Catholic Church. But what happened? The Polish Pope was followed by a German pope. And the German pope readmitted him.
Oh.
So at that point, I decided to open my mouth. And I went to the Holocaust Museum, and I volunteered to deliver my eyewitness experience. And ever since, I spoke to approximately 17,000 students in schools, colleges, universities, churches, synagogues, clubs, anywhere where was requested my eyewitness testimony, I gave it.
Well, that is all the time that we have for this part of today's show, but I want to thank you, Cesar Frustaci, so much for coming in and telling your story to us today. I really appreciate it.
That's my pleasure and my mission.
Mr. Frustaci will be the guest speaker at the Catholic-Jewish Dialogue of Collier County's 80th Annual Kristallnacht Commemoration event. That's coming up this Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at Temple Shalom on Pine Ridge Road in Naples. We'll have a link to more information about that on our website, gulfcoastlive.org. He's also the author of the book, Not a Trace of Smoke, Choice, Chance, or Miracle. He wrote this book about his experiences, if you would like to read that, available, I presume, on Amazon.
Yeah, and what happens is that, and that's very important, to the coincidences, three or four coincidences in the life of a person, it makes a nice thing. But 20, 30 coincidences, it's a completely different issue. And that is what happened to me. And this is why I call miracles,
yeah,
not anymore coincidences, because that saved my life frequently from, not from one day to the other, but from 1 hour to another.
Numerous
instances. And this is why I call it more miracles than coincidences.
Exactly. So when we return, I'm joined by FSW journalism professor Ron Feimster to get a preview of his upcoming lecture called President Trump's Twitter Feed, The Rhetoric of Authoritarian Propaganda. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.